Hello, I'm Kevin Henry, and I am thrilled to introduce you to a brand new, informative, and entertaining podcast called Limitless Journeys, the African Immigrant Podcast. Listeners to this podcast are in for a real cultural treat as we kick off a series of podcast episodes that will inspire, educate, and enlighten. Now let me step aside and let the hosts introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Mara C.K.
And I'm David Bolinda.
And you're listening to Limitless Journeys, the African Immigrant Podcast. I'm just, my first question to both of you is, tell me a little bit about your background and kind of how you came, to be where you are now, kind of your personal story. And then we could go into more specific questions. Like one thing we discussed last time, we were talking about just being Black. Coming from a different country, being Black is different than being, in somewhat different perspective than if you were Black in this country with all the history and, all the racism and all that stuff. So I'm real interested to hear about what that was like, just kind of navigating and going, oh, wow, okay, what's going on here? Why are people acting a certain way and acting a certain way toward me and that kind of thing. So why don't we just start off, we can go with Mara first, just a little bit of background about, where you were born and how you wound up in Washington State.
Okay. So my name is Mara Kisiro, and I was told I was born in Thika and then moved to Nakuru shortly after that. And then when I lived in Kenya, Nakuru is a city, it's the newest city in East Africa. And when I was there, I spent my years from being a baby to, I want to say, the age of 15 in Nakuru. And I went to high school. No, I went to primary school over there. They call it primary school. I think, they call it elementary school. And then I also went to high school in Kenya. I did my first year of high school in Kenya. And then I relocated to the United States in 2012. Where I came to stay with my dad and family over here. And I went to high school in Delaware. So when I came to the US, I went to Delaware. I lived in Delaware. I went to high school in Delaware. The last 3 years of my secondary high school, I was in Delaware. And then I finished Delaware, graduated with a high school diploma, and then did an associate's. I went to school, technical college. I did an associate's. And then it was not complete. I decided to take another route. I tried to do nursing school. And also, I just realized it was not part of my dreams. So I started working when I was 18. I started just doing regular jobs here and there. And then when I was 24, I relocated to Washington because my family had already moved from Delaware to Washington too. So when I came from Washington, that's when I got a variety of ranges. I developed a variety of things that I like to do. I got more interested with the business aspect of life. I got interested with farming. I got interested with all different kind of things that are very communal to my community. And that's how my journey began. So I would go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because you said a couple, everything's interesting, but you said a couple things, and I wanted to make sure I asked you about the experience of coming over here. So you come over here and you wind up in Delaware and you're going to high school. What was that like? Was that easy to make that transition, or was it difficult or challenging in any way?
It was very challenging, number one, because I was new. I was young. I was very young at age. I was 16 years old. And when I moved here, I didn't know nothing. Like, I did not know anything about America. I had not learned anything about history of America. I was still young. I was still not understanding culture. So when I moved here and I went to high school here, it was very, very challenging, number one, because language barrier, I could not understand. I remember even when I came here, the first time I came on the plane, the lady came and said something to me. She was like, oh, do you want vegan? And I said, yeah. And I didn't understand. She brought me vegan food. And I was like, why did you give me vegan food? But it's because I was not understanding what she was saying, the language. So same thing happened in high school. I could not understand what the teachers are teaching because this English was so hard for me. And coming from Kenya, the languages too, the subjects, they are totally different. In Kenyan school, you're taught, they tell you what to learn. But over here, you get a choice. You can choose if you want to go do arts, if you want to do nursing. But in Kenya, there's nothing like that. You're all forced to do that. So when I came here and there was the option to do that, I was like, wow. But then I don't understand yet because I don't know what I want. I'm still new to the country. I'm still trying to settle in with family. So it was really challenging. And then the school culture did not accept me because I was still new. I had, they called them FOB. I was fresh off the boat. So all the African kids over there, probably they came here at a young age and they were more intertwined with the American kids. So they were like, oh, they don't want to associate with me because I'm straight from Africa, and they also have their own things going on. So it was really, really tough for me. I really had a rough experience in high school. Also, in terms of the food they were giving in school, it was not the best food. And I had no choice but to eat it. And I could not understand what this kind of food is coming from Africa, where we are eating githeri or ugali. So it was really, really, I had a rough time in high school, honestly.
It sounds like it. And what attracted you to farming? Because at a certain point, you said you were interested in business and that kind of thing, but then farming, how did
So
that
when I
happen?
moved to Washington, I guess in Delaware there's not a lot of farming going on over there, and there's not a lot, it's more laid back. When I moved to Washington, I discovered I just started loving being outside nature, taking walks and stuff like that. And then gradually I started having pots, little pots in my apartment where I would grow flowers. And I would see them bloom. And I was like, wow, this is really nice. I like this. It's more nature and it's therapeutic. And I get my hands in the soil. And when my friends used to come to my house, they used to love it because it's like a botanical garden. So, and then slowly but sure, we had just gotten a farm in King County. That's when I started farming. I started involving the youth, the immigrants to farm with me. And from there, I grew a business out of it. And now I'm a business mogul in farming.
Great. That's a very inspiring story. It's great that you overcame those challenges as well. Let's go over to David. David,
Thank
why don't you
you.
tell us your story and how you wound up here?
Thanks very much, Kevin. This is David. My last name is Bolinda. I was born in Kenya in a small town now that's grown to be a big city called Nakuru in the Rift Valley province. That's west of Nairobi, which is the capital city. So when I was born, I was born in a big family, so we had a lot going on. We grew up poor, we didn't have money. My mother did not have a job. She never went to school, all that good stuff. So my dad, who used to work for the colonial masters as a chef at that time, before I was born, Kenya got independence in 1963, so many years before I was born. But when the colonialists left, because now when Kenya was getting independence, they were scared and started running away. And then I think they sold him their business, which was a textile shop where he would sell clothes and stuff like that. But he did not have the business acumen to run a business and faced so many challenges down the road. Long story short, many years later, he was bankrupt. He didn't have money. And I think he went into a deep sense of depression for a while because I never saw him for many, many years. The last time I saw him was when he dropped me in high school. At that time, I was 13 years old, 12 and a half, I want to actually turned 12 point something, 12.2 months. And he dropped me in high school, boarding school that time. I was a really tiny kid. So I was crying all the time because I was so used to my mother. I used to be with my mother every time, and now and miles and miles away and all that stuff. So I'm here in a different city. I was really, really stressed for a long time. I cried a lot. And then there were bullies in that school who really, really tormented me and then they said that that's just part of the culture, that you're a mono. They used to call us monos, meaning one, that you're the first year. But anyway, that aspect, 4 years later, I graduated from school, went to what we used to call then high school, which is like associate college over here, because we used to do 4 years in secondary school and then 2 years in high school and then 3 years at the university. So I went to a high school. I studied, I did a lot of, in my school, I did a lot of drama arts and music. I loved that, Swahili language and all that good stuff. So I went to high school, graduated, and went junior. We call it junior college, probably associate college. I got my associates in Swahili and religious studies and history. Then from there, I went to the university, and as Mara said, you don't decide what you're going to study; they tell you. So I was told you're going to be a teacher. So I went to the university, Kenyatta University in Nairobi. I graduated as a teacher. And then from there, I went to teach in a place called Central, in a place called Kegumo in Central Province, which is not far east of Nairobi. Taught there for 6 years. And all along, I knew I was destined to go to America. I didn't know how, but I knew I would come here because there's a lot of, it was a class thing that if you went to America, you're in a different level. If you have a relative in America, that's something that's very great for you. So I came to America in the year 2000 through an invitation from a friend of ours. And then I liked it because I knew that this is the place that I had said I was going to come. And what I came to Baltimore City with my friend who we used to do drama with. We used to do a lot of theater arts together, acting plays, going to schools and showing people the books, set books that were normally there. We would do that. Then we went to, he came here before me, came here in 1996. So he made arrangements for me to come over, came here, went to Baltimore City. And my brother then was living in Williamsburg, Virginia. So I went to see my brother, who is a priest, actually, Catholic priest. And so I spent a little time with him. And then I said, you know what? I'm out of here. I went to Colorado, I went to Denver. And just to see new opportunities, what opportunities were available. I stayed in Denver for a couple of years, went back to Baltimore, stayed in Baltimore for a couple of years, went back to Virginia in Roanoke, then came back to Baltimore, went to Delaware, and now.
I need a diagram here, like a map to with a little figure of you going back and forth
Going
in
back and
different
forth, I'm like,
places.
where are you going? Anyway, finally we landed in Washington. My wife and I decided that this was a good spot. We actually went to multiple states. We said we wanted to went to North Carolina. We thought it was a nice spot. Then we did not want to go north towards New York. It's too crowded, too many people. We went to Central America. It was too not for black people.
Oh, really?
That's what we thought. The places we went to South Florida. No, then we came to Washington, and I thought Washington was a beautiful place. I really wanted to go to Oregon myself. I loved Oregon from so many things I'd read and studied, and I came to Washington. We had to negotiate a deal, and then we just came to Washington. In Washington, we came here in 2016, I want to say. 16. And then when I came here, oh, so I went to school in Philadelphia, a school called Newman College, where I did two master's degree, one in mental health counseling and one in organizational strategic leadership. So I finished those. I wanted to go back to school to do a PhD. I said, no, I'm too old now. Let me first of all take a break. So anyway, we came to Washington, and then coming to Washington, one thing, my mind is very creative. I know that, and I'm very innovative. So I realized that we did not have a lot of, we were talking to, we went to a party. We were looking for friends. We were new in the area, looking for new friends. And somebody said, oh, there's a party for Kenyan folks. Why don't we go? So we just showed up from church. Now somebody had invited us from church. So we went there, and sure, and there was people having Kenyan food, which was like, yay. We like a lot of goat meat that is roasted, and ugali, which is like corn flour that is ground like a porridge, but it's thick. So it makes like a like some thick porridge
Like cornbread.
it's like cornbread, yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
but no
tasted
sugar.
it. I have a brother-in-law who's Kenyan, actually, and
Oh.
he's quite the cook.
I
So you're making me hungry right now, just talking about this.
think next time we'll do it live so that we can have food
All
there.
right, yeah, okay. All right, you got a deal.
So we like cook. I like cooking myself as well. So I enjoy cooking and growing my own food, and that's how I got interested in farming. Knowing where I'd come from, where my mother could not find a spot for us to grow food because we're dirt poor. Honestly, we did not have a lot of food, and I started working when I was 14 years old so that I could help my mom because my dad was not there. So when school was out, I would go and wash uniforms for a soccer team. And we used to be paid then like 20 shillings, which was to me a lot of money per set of uniforms. But then I would go to the like a farmer's market and buy food and bring home and just support my mom because she had no money. She couldn't make income. And so she would normally go out and find spaces that people's property that they had not, there was nothing, no structure, and she would grow crops there. So sometimes people would come and cut it off and just, because the owner of the property would come and just slash everything. But anyway, that was the background that I came in. And so when I came here and I was able to find a small space, I said, I'll grow my own. From Delaware, actually, we used to grow our own vegetable in the backyard. Even in Baltimore, we used to do that. So I wanted to continue with that practice of growing culturally relevant foods that I would enjoy and the family would enjoy. So we were talking with Dixon, and he mentioned to me that he had gone through Seattle Tilth to learn about farming in America and stuff like that. And then with time, we said, how about, so there was a workshop happening the next week, and there was this lady from an organization called Living Well Kent who said, hey, I have been given space in a greenhouse. If you guys want, we could share the space. I could give you some place to farm. This is in urban. So we said, oh, that's great. That's a great idea. So we started farming there. Initially, we were six farmers from Africa who we created the boxes. There's a lot of labor of love work. Nobody was paying us anything. We just were looking forward to the future of what we would anticipate would come out of it. And that's how we started. And then, long story short, we got Highland College who gave us a piece of land at a community garden. So we said, why don't we establish ourselves as an organization that's called Wakulima, which means farmers, USA, farmers in the USA. And then we can bring people who have a common interest in that area. And since then, we've really been growing. We were given, initially, it was almost a quarter of an acre. We went to almost half an acre. Now we have farming at Horseneck Farms at 4 acres. And we just got awarded money to be able to purchase our own property through the Conservation Features Fund, $1.5 million. So we are hoping that we will be able to get space in South King County to continue running our business, Wakulima USA, as a nonprofit, which we are, but also be self-sustainable in trying to raise money through farming activities.
Wow, that's great. You answered about eight of my questions just in like 5 minutes right there. So you're making my job easy. I wanted to talk to you about, before I forget, about your perspective being from Africa as a black person from Africa, or however you want to phrase it. Because when we talked before, you were talking about, I think that people make the assumption that, they see a person who's brown or black and they say, okay, they kind of lump them all into one category, no matter where they're from. They could be from England, France, Africa. Oh, it's just all
Exactly.
black people. They're all the same. They all think the same. So
Yeah.
can you talk about that a little bit?
So when before I left Kenya I don't know if I mentioned this in our earlier conversation, I never knew I was black. I never even had a thought that I would be considered black because one, as you can see, my skin is not even black. If you look at my watch, it's black, but my skin is probably on the lighter side. So I never thought that any that mattered anywhere. So when I arrived here, and because again, people say you have an accent, I was like, We all have an accent. It just depends on where you are. Because I just became very defensive. And every time somebody said that, I said, you have an accent as well. So why would that matter? You're not listening to what I'm talking to. You're listening to the sound of how I'm telling the story. So I never realized I was black until I came here and we were all lumped together as black people, as people of color. And it took me a long time to really understand what that means. Because as an African born in Africa, we used to see the African American growing myself. Let me not talk on behalf of anybody else. I used to see African Americans who were living in the United States as brothers who had been taken away without wanting, as slaves, basically. So the reunion, because I used to love a lot watching like black athletes, like black movies, Different Strokes, a long time ago, all those kind of programs that would make me feel home in that environment. But when I came here and realized that I'm being seen as part of the other, it was a major challenge to me, and even the mindset, even the transactions that go on in so many areas, I just realized this, and we are realizing more. There's a lot of systemic stuff that is in it's very deep. It's really, really deep. A person who is racist does not say or even think that they're racist. Sometimes they think that they are doing the right thing, because if I have been brought up in a culture that has told me that I am better than the other person, I will believe that as it from the childhood to adulthood, somebody would believe that until you realize, oh, what is that? Then the other thing that we face here as immigrants or people who have migrated here is language. Anytime we have conversations like when we are talking right here, I probably am thinking in three languages in that second, translated from my mother tongue into Swahili, into English that somebody else can understand that quick. So when we talk about us being unable to communicate effectively, it's because sometimes we need extra time to be able to, and some of the wording, some of the things that we talk about, they don't exist in our culture. For example, if you tell my grandmother about snow, she has no idea what that is. So, and then there's a lot of colonization of the mind in terms of religion. So religion was used as a tool to colonize Africa. So because of that, we wanted always to be like the white person. We were told that for you, you'll be washed, you'll be cleaner than snow. So we didn't know what snow was. We'll be as white as snow. And because we didn't know what snow was, when you're told that this is a white man, now you think that person is better than you. There's a lot, it's really deep experience, especially for somebody like me.
Well, very deep on a psychological level in so many ways. I want to go over to Mara. I'd love to get your comments about, living here and how people perceive you and how it was and how it has been or how it is now, when you interact with people.
Yeah. So initially, I was not very attentive to the how the black, how they view black and white. I was not attentive because I did not believe which we are not equal, right? But then recently, and in the last couple of years, as I've grown older, it's really, really when I'm in the business industry, when it comes to housing, when it comes to all these different aspects of life, when you're doing transactions, you see how you're labeled and how you're treated. For example, if I was looking for a house probably and I don't have enough money for that, and there is another person who doesn't have enough money, say we have the same amount of money, but we're different races, the first priority will be the other race other than me. First of all, because I come with a different accent. So already they will look at me, oh, probably she doesn't have money, she doesn't have da 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 da. So there's all those different aspects of life that I have experienced firsthand when it comes to business. For you to access some funding, there is all these barriers. There's oh, you have to do this, you have to, there's different levels of barriers that are just not to support the BIPOC community, for example, let alone being a woman of color and being young too in this business industry that is male dominated, white male dominated. So there's a lot of challenges. There's a lot of, I still have a lot of hope. And that's why I keep pushing for this. I keep saying we have to do this. We have to talk about it so we can be all aware and educate ourselves. Education is also another thing in our community. Because we're so used to being oppressed, we don't know how to say no. We can stand up for ourselves. So there's a lot of dynamics that goes into it, and different experiences. I've seen some of my friends, they can't even get a car because of their skin color, or they can't do anything because they don't. People, even a lot of people, cannot afford housing just because of being your skin color. And that's very, very, I feel like we should, as we, the younger generation come up, we should educate ourselves and try to do self-education and learn. We can change. We can try to be better for the future, for the next generation, and be the change, be the movement.
Well, and I'm thinking that it's so important. Well, you said several things that are important, but one thing about just the next generation, about youth, it really particularly disturbs me when I see a young person who's been infected with racism and or some type of bias because it's been passed along in their family or through some other source. And I'm thinking, well, okay, so this is like recycled racism, because the cycle just keeps going, because as soon as the old racists die off, then they're replaced by the new racists. So it's so important for them to be educated and know about cultures beyond what they just read in their, you know, eighth grade history book, which may be devoted one page to slavery or one page to Africa. And there's so much ignorance and so much misinformation sometimes. And again, you know, like you said, both of you pointed out, there's like this psychological conditioning that's happened, you know, through colonization and almost like a brainwashing, you know, and when people complain very often, well, wait a second, I don't like the way this is going. Then they get gaslit. It's like, oh, what's the problem? You know, all you got to do, Mara, is just work hard, and there's no racism. You know, women have just the same amount of, you know, chance of being successful as men. And then all of a sudden you're thinking, well, wait a minute, it sounds like I'm the problem now.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned some of the challenges. What would you like people to know about your organization and, you know, just the farming community and things that maybe people just don't know about? Because I'll be honest, I grew up in the city, so I've learned more about farming in the last 2 years just by talking to people like you, because I think I went to a farm once when I was a kid. So if I'm just meeting you at a barbecue and I'm like, what's this organization? You know, what do you really want people to know about it that makes it special, I guess, what you're doing?
I think the concept of bringing people together using cultural values that our ancestors used, because, you know, just a little back story, as a mental health therapist, when I used to work and see clients in my office, I used to do one-on-one therapy, sometimes group therapy, but that's not for us as Black people. It's very hard. It's not individualized. We do a lot of things together. If you listen to our languages, we speak in terms of plural. It's not I, it's we. If you want to talk about something that's going on with me, I would use a third person and say, hey, I know somebody who probably went through that, but basically this person is telling you, this is my problem, but I'm trying to be somebody else's keeper. So that's one aspect of the work that we do. We have incorporated mental health and farming. So we bring people together to grow culturally relevant foods that have specific nutritional value to our community. The process of farming in itself is therapy. We have farmers having conversations. We have people who have a lot going on in their lives. And when they come to the farm and touch the Mother Earth, they just find solace and peace. In Africa or in Kenya, where I was born, land is very important. Ownership of land is very, very important. That connects us. In Swahili, they say the origin of life is in the soil. And same concept, unto the soil we shall return. So the soil shapes us, gives us food. So we really have a lot of respect for nature, Mother Nature. Mother Nature gives us food, Mother Nature gives us water, Mother Nature keeps us alive. When we are born, then we die, we go back to Mother Nature, and that's where the continuity is. So when actually most communities in Africa, when you die, people don't die, people go to the world of the living dead. So, because the spirit that we have cannot die, which is the same concept as the Christian concept. I did a lot of studying for the African religious heritage. I did a lot of that research when I was in the University of Kenya, Kenyatta University in Nairobi. And there is unison that we are each other's keeper. And this is the concept that we're trying to bring as immigrants, as African people, that we can have our own space and farm together, grow our food together, live together, and still be in the United States. So we don't see anybody else as the other. We see people as part of who we are. Professor J.S. Mbiti says, I am because we are, and since we are, therefore I am. So that concept of us being each other's keeper is something that we'd like to learn. We would like people to know that we do grow foods that are culturally relevant and have a lot of significance to our community members. So it makes most of our community members feel that they belong. We have done a lot of trainings during the past years since we've been to encourage people to start their home garden, small gardens at home, or grow a tomato in your home. I know this worked very well for me when I was doing the therapy work, and I would tell my kids to go get a tomato. Start nurturing that. And it does help a lot with kids with ADHD when we give them a project that they feel that they are in charge and can control. So there is a lot of things that we can talk about. We can talk about farming, and I'll let Maura talk about the youth program. We can talk about mental health. And also, we've realized that we have become a voice for the community, for our community, especially immigrants. So we do a lot of advocacy work as well.
Wow. Okay. I love that you tied in the mental health in there as well, because I think, it's easy to forget about that aspect of nutrition and about eating right and what goes into your body and what that means for your mental health as well as your community, and how that food and the farming can actually be kind of the tissue that connects people really. Maura, what are some of your feelings about what's special about what you do, what you'd like people to know, what you're particularly proud of, I guess, makes you feel really
So
good.
to add on what David just said about the farming aspect of it, I also for me personally is okay. So we have a youth. I try to bring the youth to the farm so we can farm together and have that communal joy, celebrate with the sun, and then we eat our food. And also to add on that, the whole perspective for this is to take it to a different level where our community members can understand. You can make a source of living from these products that we're selling, from the produce that you're growing. You can also make a source of income from that. It's not, you don't, it doesn't have to be the regular 9 to 5. You don't have to work in a place where you're not feeling happy. You don't have, it's also to impact the community and show the youth, the young generation, it is doable to eat from what you've grown. And to live comfortably and pay your bills and probably even save some money to buy a bigger space of land. So it's more of that and also more of the holistic approach of it and the wellness of the mind, the growth, the way you see the plants grow, the watering, the nurturing of it. All these different aspects play the major role to the mental health. Because as we know here, it's very, very easily. We have a lot of cases of suicide among the young people, a lot of depression, drugs, and alcoholism. If we can channel all these energies to the farm, or not, it doesn't have to be the farm, to arts. Somebody might like drawing, but they don't have the resources to draw. They don't know where to get the resources. They're restricted on this caregiving job that they have just to pay their bills. But this is an artistic person who can do something else with their life. So the goal also for Wakulima is to be a community doctor, a community healer, where anybody can come and do whatever sorts of things that you can. Because also in our culture, arts is not acknowledged like a career. It's not, it's like a joke. You better be a nurse than become an artist, because that's how we've been brought up, and it's strictly by the first generation, probably our parents who came here and didn't have a choice to do anything else. So they will instill in you have to go to school, you have to go to school so you can become a nurse, or you can become a doctor, you can become a lawyer, of which works for some people. And for some people, it does not work. Like for me personally, it couldn't work for me because I have a business mindset. I have a mindset where my mind likes to grow and keep thinking about new things, new innovations, and stuff like that. And I have the opportunity to do that. So it's my job to help our community and the young people who are interested in the same kind of things, and we can grow together and make the movement, the change that I was talking about earlier, be the change within us. That's how I look at it.
Thank you for listening to Limitless Journeys, the African Immigrant Podcast.